You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation.
It's amazing to see how far this thing has grown, and it's exciting to see your studio and be in here and see how this has come along as well.
Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I appreciate how you cover NDSU football and everything you guys do.
I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to.
I really appreciate you guys. You know, Ross, Zach, now, Bison Report for what you guys do for Bison football.
The host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans? What kind of Monday is this, Zach?
Anti-victory Monday? I'm not going to say it.
The Big L Monday?
Yeah, I'm sad.
Your dad blamed me.
Yeah, I mean...
I think it's unfair.
I blame you, too.
I mean, sure.
We were undefeated in games you picked us to win.
I was.
So...
Yeah, I haven't... Got a fall Bison prediction wrong since Iowa in 2016.
Not a bad run.
No. Spring was a mess.
I'm going to start tailing you when I can gamble responsibly.
Sure.
In North Dakota.
No, it's fair. Yeah, spring season was a mess. Saturday was a mess.
Yeah.
You know, I think you get into the news part of it, you know, because that's how we usually kick off the show. Really, really key that people understand that Southern Illinois got whacked by Missouri State.
Yeah.
And this, of course, means that the Bison control their own destiny.
Just got to win the next two.
Yeah. Producer Brendan, could you while you're working up there, could you please pull up the latest FCS football poll? Folks, we got intern Brendan in the studio for the first time. You can say what's up to the people.
What's up, everyone? Nice to meet you all.
Brandon's going to be helping us out here and there, and is doing a phenomenal job so far. He's the one getting you those coaches' show recaps, those press conference recaps. He's helping us out.
Killing it.
You know, we made, and we'll get into this in a second, but we made just Google FCS top 25. That's going to get you there faster. I made the comment that no 10-1, of course they got to beat Youngstown State, got to come home and beat South Dakota.
Yeah,
no 10-1 Bison team with a solo Missouri State football conference championship has ever been ranked outside the top two, seeded outside the top two.
Yeah, I don't know how you would in the toughest conference in football. Sam Houston gets that benefit of the doubt because. You know, defending national champions, how could you drop them down in rankings
right.
if they win all their games, which they will. But 10-1 Missouri Valley champs, you're playing at home for the playoffs, far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, nobody drops down the top 25 like North Dakota State when they lose.
We're at six right now.
Yeah, the one that I'm looking at here, which is this the coaches poll or the stats poll? This is stats. You know, they're at five, right behind South Dakota State. I got to tell you, folks, North Dakota State has a better resume than South Dakota State. Yeah. SDSU has two home losses, and one of their wins is a non-counter against a Division II. They have one head-to-head home victory by one possession against North Dakota State.
The home win against NDSU doesn't improve their resume to be better than NDSU's resume.
No, and I think that'll... Honestly, I think that'll play itself out even if both teams win out.
Mm-hmm.
I think the selection committee is going to have more common sense to understand that at the end of the day, if North Dakota State goes 10-1 against Division I opponents and South Dakota State goes 8-2,
it seems pretty cut and dry.
Right, and NDSU gets the AQ.
Right.
Gets the Valley title.
Yep.
Brings home the bacon that matters.
And yeah, I mean, that's the thing that at the end of the day, you make the playoffs when you win the Valley. And
sure.
Number one goal is to win the Valley. Like we said, you just have to win the next two. We can't afford another stumble like we had on Saturday.
No, I mean, shoot, the way that Craig Haley and the rest of these guys are treating North Dakota State, they lose one of these coming in, they're going to miss the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
You know, they do not get the same respect that
9-2 Bison not make the playoffs. Yeah,
exactly. It's not like they've carried the subdivision, you know, for a decade here. I guess I want to get in briefly. You know, I know it's a Division III opponent, but North Dakota State men's basketball, their preview has just hit by our guy Nate. Their preview has just hit Bison Report. The written preview, you're getting this in the morning. We're going to have Coach Richmond with me. Big, long interview. Sit down. Get your popcorn ready. You know, look around. Make sure your boss isn't coming, because this is 35 minutes of basketball goodness.
I want to be listening
with
to it.
me and the head coach. We'll probably drop the audio just in a podcast on its own, maybe on Thursday. You know, and then Zach and I'll drop the football pod on Friday. But it's – I would watch the video just because we did a good job producing it. There's some sweet highlights that are going to be in that. And kind of just the facial expressions and like the conversation aspect to it. I don't know. I think we're just moving more and more towards video being a better medium.
Yeah. I mean, even everything I consume in my day to day, even if that's like other podcasts.
Yeah.
I always prefer to watch it on YouTube because you get the same content, but like you said, you get to see people interact with each other and it's a little different than just listening to two people over Spotify or whatever.
It's all right. They start their season officially tomorrow.
Yep.
Again, it's going to be they're South Dakota State footballing it a little bit. They're bringing in a non-counter. They're going to play Concordia Moorhead, my alma mater, roll Cobbs. I don't think the Cobbs, though, are going to roll very hard tomorrow. Tough deal, too. They lost Noah Christensen, the kid from Breck that was on North Dakota State, had some mental health issues, transferred to Concordia. I thought that was going to be a great fit, especially with Coach Borman over there. Noah, just from the news perspective, from like people that care about kids that have been through our program before, Noah is back at home. Noah is playing for North Dakota State School of Science in Wahpeton, playing some JUCO ball. Hopefully he can get his mind right. You know, got to take care of your mentals. And then 2 years at WAP Science, maybe Division I or a good Division II program after that. But NDSU, not a fit for him. Concordia, not a fit for him. Just hoping that the young kid finds whatever it is that he's looking for.
Yeah, you know, as somebody who's an extreme mental health advocate for student-athletes, obviously wish the best for Noah. And, you know, going to a JUCO place and finding the correct spot, I think it just gives kids a little more time to find that next stop that, you know, is the right fit. There's a lot of pressure to come here and play at NDSU when you're a local kid. So, you know, if you don't perform, that it's hard on your thought process and your self-confidence. So obviously best wishes for him and hope everything works out.
Absolutely. It'll be an interesting game. You know, I don't know. I think if Coach has a rabbit up his sleeve as far as a rotation or what they're going to do, tomorrow will be like the last game that he doesn't whip it out.
Right.
Just because they're going to beat Concordia.
Yeah.
And that is all there is to it. But then they head out to, and we'll get into some of this. I think Nate and I might just do a basketball pod, I guess, this week. But yeah, they head out to California for a game. And then on Monday, they've got UNLV at the Thomas and Mack. And then they've got the Wildcats of Arizona. Bison Report will be live at all of that except the nonsense going on in California. We will not be there, but we will, of course, be streaming the game, providing live coverage, et cetera, et cetera. We'll be doing our thing. So that's the hoops end of it, but you guys are here because North Dakota State lost to South Dakota State, and you want us to talk about it.
Yeah, I can't really wrap my mind around why anyone wants to hear me talk about anything, but let's get into it.
Actually, producer Brennan, if you will, let's get into... I want to break down some conversations, I guess, from the press conference. Brandon, roll what Matt said to me about the quarterback situation, please.
Is the quarterback situation still under kind of evaluation? Or, I mean, obviously Quincy and Cam were both available. You chose to tackle it the way you did. Is that still kind of under evaluation, or would you expect Cam with some Quincy sprinkled in moving forward.
I anticipate Cam playing.
And that was the end of what he said to me.
I mean, short and sweet, as only Matt Entz will leave it. I think if I'm going to translate some coach speak here, Cam's a starter.
I'm yeah. And I know, like, it wasn't the cleanest game in the world. You know, I thought Christian was held down. I mean, mm-hmm. he threw up a 500 ball, and I mean, like, not 50-50. I mean, when you're a kid and you're playing the game 500, but that'll happen when you have A-gap pressure that's just turned loose.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this before, but there's so many factors that go into quarterback play.
Yeah.
And I think there was, like, I'm not going to hold that against Cam.
No.
SDSU just had a perfect game plan for how to beat us. So
you give your alien a chance, and
yeah, if you throw it up to one guy on the team, it's going to be one.
Right.
So yeah. I'm fine with balls like that sometimes.
For sure. But other than that, I mean, he was a gamer. They were getting their butts kicked. He didn't quit. They didn't quit. Mm-hmm. You know, I really, really thought, and I'm not going to get into, I just want to be, North Dakota State didn't lose this game because the refs were bad. No. I want to be very clear about that.
No, you can be mad about it, but we got our butts kicked.
Yeah. I had a problem with the Gindorf calling the back the end zone. I know somebody said that the WDAY camera was late or something and they didn't get a chance to see it.
Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you from my vantage point, and there's still shots of Zach Mathis not getting a call with his jersey down by his elbow. That's just unfortunate.
Completely undressed, yeah.
But I thought they were there early on Gindorf. Again, if there's South Dakota, because I know South Dakota State fans love to listen to this podcast. I know they love to clip out things that I say. They like to even put it in graphics and give it to their linebackers.
Yeah, to their weird players, weirdos. But,
North Dakota State did not lose this game because of the refs.
No, yeah. I mean, if you want to hop on Twitter and dance on our graves, go ahead. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, whatever. You won the regular season game. And would I have liked to win the game? Yes. But I am not going to sit here and blame that game on the stripes.
No. Producer Brennan, could we please get the conversation about the linebackers? Because this is something that I've talked about a little bit. Go ahead and play that.
Run defense being an issue last in the spring against South Dakota State. Mm-hmm. They had success running the football again. You know, I think we've talked it to death about the size of the linebackers and et cetera. You're getting smaller trying to defend the spread. Do you feel like you maybe got out ahead of that a little bit too fast, or is does the run defense issues not have anything to do with size?
I think we're reaching for things right now when we think that we're struggled with a good football team because we were too small. Are you saying that the other teams we beat weren't any good and that's why we were successful?
No, I mean, just in general, you've gotten smaller at linebacker. There's no
unicorn like Nick DeLuca.
Right. Or even,
I mean, I don't know very many teams in the country who have a guy like him.
Normally, you got both outside backers at about 205 pounds. Do you feel like your issues against the run, against even South Dakota State or really anybody, if you're not playing the run defense you want to, do you think that has anything to do with size?
It probably could. If we're not playing well up front and we're getting knocked off the ball from a defensive line standpoint, sure, I can imagine. But I mean, you'll see when we go base personnel, we get Mason Hofstad in there, who's a little bit bigger. I think Cole Wisniewski's probably 215 now. James has probably been stuck at a little bit around 215 because of this injury and hasn't been able to develop. And Jasir's kind of a big safety type body. I don't know if 215, he's probably 210, 205, but execution is what we're looking for. We don't see a lot of teams that line up under center and just try to run the football at us.
So I'm just going to kind of explain where my question comes from and what my whole theory is behind this. It's something we've talked about. You and I got really excited at the Albany game when Mason Hofstad did play some early down stuff, did play some, in some base, whatever. So it's my theory that both at the defensive tackle position and at the outside linebacker position, they just got ahead of themselves a little bit. I think, going with like basically all three tech bodies on defensive tackle and going with all safety converts at outside linebacker, that's great. And honestly, it made you able to do a really, really good job defensively against Eastern Washington in the playoffs twice. And it will continue to serve them well against spread teams moving forward. Legitimately, like it's a good for in general what college football has become, it's a positive thing. But when Sam Houston State and South Dakota State decide to jam it down your throat, it would be good to have a backup plan.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point I was just going to make, is maybe that's the whole trend of college football, FCS football as a whole, but the bulk of your games are the playing that you're playing are in a conference that are behind that curve. It's a lot of run game in the Missouri Valley, and that's just the long and short of it. You know,
because it's a bunch of programs trying to emulate North Dakota State.
Exactly, and they want to find this, because it's easy to recruit kids like that up here that are big and beefy and want to slam their head into a wall. It's not easy to pull a lot of Cole Wisniewski's. It's me. Hey, by the way, I'm sitting about 330, coach. You need a goal line D-tack. Hit me up. I'll enroll in a class.
Just get that 5'7 ready. We're going to play some one tech.
Hell yeah. Let's go. But I agree with you. You know, they can be as far as athletes go, the linebacking room is about as freaky as it gets when you talk about James Kaiser and Wisniewski and Nick Kubitz and Wirtz when he's healthy. Mason, I'm not going to say you because you know why. But when you're 210 pounds sitting in an A-gap on a gap scheme, it doesn't matter how athletic you are. It matters how big and sturdy and how well you can take on blocks. And I think that's just something that's missing. I think you hit the nail on the head as far as we're adapting to college football as a whole and having three tech bodies to rush the passer and big enough to play in the run game. But sometimes you need an Aaron Steidel.
Well, shoot. And even like even at defensive end, like the Shaka Rokeses of the world are not going to, you know, stack and shed a 260-pound tight end either.
Right. I mean, any other universe, Shaka's a middle linebacker.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's how the game's changing. And I think a little bit is recruiting to, this is such a science that I have no intel on, but it's such a science where you're getting ready to win games in December and January.
Yeah.
But you play a lot of games before that, and you kind of see the result of that style of recruiting.
For sure. And I want to talk about results in a second too, but producer Brennan, could we get the last one, which is me asking him, and by the way, this is for all of you goddamn internet scavengers. I am the voice of the people. I literally took your online complaints, sat in a press conference, and asked your question about the hurry up offense directly to the head coach. I want that recognized.
Man of the people, Ross Uglum.
All right, go ahead and play it.
Hurry up offense. You guys obviously over the last decade haven't spent a whole lot of time behind. You think of James Madison in 16, couldn't quite get that going, or even last year against Sam Houston. Do you feel like you guys need to be different in your operation from a hurry up perspective when you're down 7, down 10, or are you comfortable with kind of the way you're doing things now?
You're asking about, are you talking about a 2-minute deal, or are you talking about just like in the middle of the second quarter, we're down by 7?
You feel like you guys need to be a little bit more pacey on offense, I guess.
I think it all depends on when in the game you're referring to. If it's down 10 and we're in the first, probably not.
From a pace perspective, when you were down 10?
I think we need to have more urgency, but we're talking about later in the game when we're down 10. I think we're talking about apples and oranges a little bit, first half compared to the second half. I do think we need to operate faster. And part of my frustration, and I'm sure you saw it on the sideline, is there's a lot of play clock being eaten up during the course of the game. And we got to get the information in from the box to the sideline, from the sideline to the quarterback, to the team, and then get up to the line of scrimmage, identify safety rotation, see the defense, and then get the snap and the cadence executed.
Who shares responsibility in that? Is that Tyler? Is that
it's offensive staff. I mean, they're all part of it. I mean, we're getting the play down, we're getting it signaled in. It just needs to happen faster. And so I wish we could come up with a magical pill for experience, but unfortunately sometimes we're still talking about a young man who started, is it 6 games now in his career? We need more. We do it every week, at least a couple times. So, but as you can imagine, hard to emulate the pressure of a game in practice.
All right. I think you can take some positives from that, in that they, you know, because sometimes, man, you get the company line. I mean, a lot of times you get the company line, right? Yep. And I think the company line on something like that has often been we're comfortable. We've won a lot of games. We do it, you know, we do it our way. We're still going to run power. We're still, you know, he actually literally said that. Not to that question, but he's like, we're still going to run A-gap power. We're still going to run inside zone. We just need to execute better, which I actually agree with. But in general, I think for him to say that it's on the staff, for him to recognize that it needs to happen faster, for him to recognize that there's too much time coming off the play clock, and to admit it, to say it out loud, I think is indicative of the fact that they see when they get into negative game script, they need to improve as a football team. And I kind of gave him an out there too. And I agree. I mean, I honestly, like, I agree with myself, which sounds stupid, but
shocking. Ross agrees with himself.
But like, you know, what I'm saying as far as this team is not down six with 3 minutes to go very often.
Right.
So you do, I mean, Steve Walker lived there.
Oh, yeah.
that was his kitchen, baby.
He loved the 2 minute offense. Yeah,
that was the kitchen. And it was fun and it was entertaining and it was exhilarating. But it was a hard way to live.
Yeah.
And nothing wrong with that era of Bison football. But what I'm saying is, like, these are a lot of guys that know how to win 38-10.
Right.
So when you need it, they haven't had it.
Right. And, you know, like, I thought there was a lot of – I like the answer. And just as a former player, it showed that, hey, it's not your guys' fault. Like, we need to be better too.
Yeah.
And I think even from a fan perspective, that's – it's showing that they don't think everything's all sunshine and rainbows either. They know they need to improve as well.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the frustration came into play calling during those situations rather than, you know, some of its operation and more than the casual fan would know.
Yeah.
But obviously you can't just ditch the run game in 2 minutes. Even when you can run 2 minutes whenever in the game, but there's 8 minutes left. We're down two possessions.
Yeah, time to run 2 minutes.
It's time to go. You know, you have to factor in the fact that you can't count on getting the onside kick. You have to factor in another offensive.
You'd like to factor in a stop, regular stop.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Another possession for the other team. I don't know. I just thought, you know, I was even talking to my fiance, I was watching the game with, I'm like, it's just like that, the boomer, the tick, 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 tick. Like,
yeah.
So much time off the clock. And it was almost just like watching ourselves bleed out. It was kind of frustrating to watch just from my point of view. But I like that answer. It means, you know, the fire's still there. I promise you, they don't want to lose either. But he knows, and it will get corrected as far as operation. But like you said, it's easy to win 45-0.
Right.
It's not easy to be down two possessions and need to run that kind of offense especially because that's not how our offense is built.
Right.
It's practiced a lot. Like, I did it.
Yeah.
That was when they send the starters out and the twos would go in because we needed the reps too in case somebody got hurt. But, you know, I was the one gas taking snaps for 2 minutes, huddle at the end of practice. But it's something that's definitely drilled into our heads. It's just, it's a lot harder to execute on Saturdays.
Sure. Want to get into another kind of take, and this is going to sound homerish. It's going to sound like I'm making excuses for the staff. It's going to make people that have that kind of opinion about me are going to feel validated with what I'm about to say.
Are you going to get yelled at?
I don't think I'm going to get yelled at, but in general, like, if your opinion of me is I bleed the green and yellow and I can never see anything that's wrong and whatever, like, you're going to have that opinion about after what I'm about to say. And that's fine. Everybody that left, Josh Hayes, Jabril Cox, Trey Lance, Dylan Raines. Now, Rado probably wouldn't have taken a sixth year, but I can go on and on. Adam Cofield.
Sure.
You, Quinn.
I mean, yeah.
Seriously, though. I mean, you, Quinn, even the punter kid, that Garrett, he could have played more.
Yep.
You can go on and on and on and on and on.
That whole senior class when we played UCA, basically.
Merck.
Yeah.
All those guys stayed at South Dakota State.
Yeah.
And it's twofold. A, all credit to Stig, as much as it makes me sick to say that, but all credit to Stig for keeping that group together. And B, they weren't as good.
Right.
Their players, flat out, aren't as attractive to LSU or the NFL or Western Kentucky or Virginia or whatever.
Or they'd be leaving too.
Right. And so you've got a ton. That entire defensive line is seniors. The entire thing.
Right.
Backhouse, senior. I mean, Gardner, senior. Lofton, senior.
The entire offensive line?
Senior. Like,
yeah.
That is a veteran group.
And that means a lot in college football.
It does. And so, yes, does it suck that South Dakota State gets to put 2 years on the rock? It does.
Yeah.
But they're in for a little bit of a rebuild coming up. And, you know, Pierre Strong stayed. Right. Isaiah Davis didn't hit the portal.
Shocking. But your point is valid in the fact that this is the team who goes all out in free agency because they know it's their year, yeah. Right? They held on to their team, and they're pulling out all the stops to win it this year because it's going to be a while before they have a chance again. And it's going to scare people in the Valley when the Mostar twins are seniors and yes. Cam Miller's a senior. Yes. All these guys, Brandon Westerberg's going to be a senior, has some burn now.
Sundell.
Mason Miller, Sundell, Jake Rock, all these guys.
My son, Wiz.
Wiz, Wirtz, all those guys.
Yeah.
It's going to be scary.
Courtney Eubanks.
When these boys are seniors.
Yeah.
It's a thing of like, it sucks to lose. It always does. But yeah. I'm telling you, as the guy who always tells you it's okay to smile. It's okay to smile and be happy about the future of the program.
It is. And ultimately, you know, like I said, credit to South Dakota State and their basketball team did the exact same thing. Somehow they all stayed together.
Yeah.
And whatever is going on culturally there, good for them because mm-hmm. I think a lot of people assumed that the Friedel kid would leave. A lot of people assumed that Douglas Wilson was going to go play pro ball. Thought maybe Shireman might find a Power 5 offer, blah, 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 blah. Nope.
They stayed.
Football program, again, they don't have quite the shiny toys.
Right.
The NFL ain't looking at anybody to go top three from South Dakota State.
No.
LSU ain't looking at Logan Backhouse to come play Jack linebacker for Ed Orgeron.
No.
Good
Missouri Valley players, but there's an echelon to this.
They're not looking. Virginia isn't looking for Malik Lofton to go play corner at Virginia. Now, that didn't work out for Jay Hayes either. But my point is the pilfering that happened after COVID and honestly the opt-outs that happened after COVID, people moved on with their lives, and people in Brookings really didn't. And I know like Seven Wilson didn't come back and Kay Johnson didn't come back. And,
sure.
and I understand all of that, but they're just – You can't look at the two deep and look at the ages of the people and not understand that South Dakota State was fortunate to stay more together, and they are a very veteran, very good football team.
Yeah, and there's so much more that plays into, like, we hear Ents talk about it all the time, is experience is such a huge factor.
Yes.
You know, and that this game's always going to be close, and it's always going to be tough to play, but in 2 years – Everyone who stepped field for the Bison on Saturday, they're going to have the same experience.
Yeah.
You know, when they're seniors and juniors, and there's so much like nonverbal stuff you can do as far as communication. Like when you're really, really comfortable with the guy you're playing next to on the field, it takes away an entire different worry. As opposed to somebody that, you know, you're both freshmen and you're staring at each other and you're like, what the hell are we doing? It's Saturday. Like, we're playing college football. Like I said, it sucks to lose, and it always will. It's a tough pill to swallow, but I'm trying to be less homer and be more impartial, but I'm excited about the program too. And that's weird to say even after a loss like we had last Saturday.
Yeah. The other thing, and I want to get into a little bit more kind of X's and O's stuff with you and kind of break the game down just a little bit more to kind of close. The other thing I will say is it is in South Dakota State's DNA to do absolutely everything they can to beat North Dakota State. And it's in North Dakota State's DNA to do absolutely everything they can to win the Missouri Valley and to win a national championship.
Yeah.
And that's the difference between the two programs. And that was never more evident than on Saturday. Stig and Eck empty the clip.
Yeah.
They empty the clip. You got
the snap between the legs.
Like
it all. Yeah.
I mean, they've got so much in. They've got direct snaps. They've got so much in for NDSU week. I mean, that picture of Stig in like basketball shorts and a hoodie with a Bison logo on the rock, it's just weirdo stuff.
Weird. Like, the only time we ever saw the Rock was after the game.
Sure.
Otherwise, an empty case sat in our locker room for the week. It, like, that's just what it was.
Having prayer circles at the 50-yard line around the Rock.
Weirdos. Weirdos. But, like, by the way, can we get, like some fashion sent to Stig and Brookings? Because the man is negative drip.
The plaid cargo shorts were my favorite.
Oof. I don't know, like... It is like people, if you ever watch the games during the regular season,
yeah,
it's the most vanilla Bison game of the year.
Yeah.
Why would we put it on tape? There's a high chance we're going to play him in December.
Yeah.
So it's been the formula and it's worked every time we've played them in the regular season and in the playoffs.
And this is, I mentioned you came in the office and I said, shoot, I wanted to do a little bit more research. I want intern Brennan, when I get done saying this, find the answer before the end of the show. I want to say there are at least three of the eight national championships that have L's to the Jacks in those seasons.
Yeah. I know
how many.
I was a part of one of them.
How many years have the Jacks won the national championship after beating North Dakota State?
Short answer, zero.
How many years have the Jacks won the national championship after losing to North Dakota State?
Zero.
Okay, just wanted to make sure we were 100% clear on that.
Yeah, I hope the Jacks fans are still listening. Clip that.
Offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like what I saw. Just in general, and I keep going to it, but if I'm going to place a number one like blame for that game, I'm going to put it on the O-line.
Yeah, and they'll okay accept with that. Yeah, absolutely. And we knew in that room that the team goes as far as we go. That's a quiet code that we keep to ourselves. And when we don't play well, you see the result because, you know, there's five of us on the field at one time and we work as a unit. It's not fair to go on and tell anybody else that, like, hey, the wide receivers need to pick us up, or the running, everybody just does their job. So if we're not doing our job, it all starts with us, and it can only go as far as how well we're playing. I don't even know. I don't have access to the film where you'd be able to break down actual offense. It's hard to do it from a film copy or a TV copy, to watch it from the press box and try to really understand what's going on. But I think a lot of credit just has to go that SDSU might have outplayed them I think that goes back to the spring too. We just got outplayed. I don't want to leave it at that. And I'd have to see like end zone shots and understand the game plan to know what really happened. But a naked eye reaction to it was we might have just got beat on Saturday, and that's the long and short of it.
It is. And what I saw, too, was a really, really interesting tact. And what that was, to me, was kind of a too-high shell. And what that was interesting to me was it's kind of the L.A. Rams, like Brandon Staley style of defense, where you play the too-high shell. You beg the other team to run the ball.
Right.
And the way they do it in the NFL is the two safeties, even though they're split, they have to be really, really, really good players, and they either crash down or get back into coverage. One of the two.
Yeah.
And I don't even know how much those guys were crashing. It was literally South Dakota State saying, our front seven is so good. You cannot block us. We will keep our too high shell so that you don't go up top to one.
And
I thought it was extremely effective.
It worked.
Yes.
And, you know, and being in 4 years of game prep for playing SDSU, their safeties do crash hard. And they're always good players. And they might not be world beaters, but they're guys who can come stick their nose in the box or drop in coverage and handle anything that's behind them. There were times where we would just count them as a fourth linebacker. coming yep. down and filling the box. We had to put him in the count because nobody else is going to account for him. He's running free every run play. It's not very often we see an offense get stifled like we saw as far as NDSU plays when we watch them on Saturday. And it just felt like we were stifled on Saturday. And that's not anything against anybody or any Big O as a whole did not play well. I think that's on the table. Everybody knows that. But they just had us schemed up. And there's not a lot you can do about it.
Defensively, though, I have concerns. I truly do. Because I think the perception of this defense, because of some of the really, really strong performances and because of where they're at statistically,
mm-hmm.
I think you see that like single digit points given up per game, and you're thinking like, oh, this is a 13 defense.
Right.
Oh, this is a 17 defense. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, and I have always kind of been hesitant to just anoint them because I saw what happened against Sam Houston State and I saw what happened against South Dakota State and I saw all the same kids come back.
Sure.
And I had the same concerns about stopping the run, which is key one to play Bison defense. And here we are again, 75-yard touchdown to Pierre Strong right. Jr. on the second play of the game. And why I'm saying that is I have concerns about the defense moving forward against powerful teams. They get Montana State or Eastern Washington in the playoffs, they're going to roll them.
Yeah.
But if it's South Dakota State, even at home, you have to be concerned. If it's Sam Houston State, you have to be concerned. You have to be concerned about these big, strong, burly teams.
James Madison, same kind of thing.
Yeah. These big, strong, burly teams, you have to be a little bit concerned about their ability to defend because they've played Northern Iowa, Missouri State, and South Dakota State, whom I believed to be probably the three legit offenses mm-hmm. they've faced, and they've given up 20, 20, and 27.
Right. That's a lot of points.
Is that catastrophic? No.
Yeah.
But your offense has to get into the 30s then.
Yeah. My three big takeaways defensively were one, screen game. Death by 1,000 cuts,
and
even more than that because there were 10 to 12-yard plays every time that was ran. Two, obviously run game defense. And then three, I mean, we had no matchup for Mr. Yonke. And, I mean, he ran wild.
Yeah.
It was just like, you know.
I think if they get another stud like that, it's time to just buck up and start falling with Courtney.
Yeah.
And just understand.
That's what I mean. And that might be into the thing like we talk about. I obviously never sat in a defensive room as far as game planning went.
Yeah.
But why pull out all the stops and why put Courtney and show that we have that capability when we're doing it in November?
Yeah. I mean, he just cooked Destin on an inside slant. I mean,
he's nice.
Yeah. He's a good player, but you either got to help the corner that isn't Courtney or you got to have Courtney follow the studs, period.
Yeah. Cause Courtney is your stud.
Yes.
Let your dog eat. And that, I don't really recall a lot of Bison defenses that had just a one corner follow a one receiver. You can correct me if I'm wrong.
No, but I mean, look, what they would have sometimes, like, for example, C.J. Smith, when he was clearly the best corner, they would give him the boundary and then leave him alone.
Right.
And the field would be basically the other two safeties and the other corner. And so
helping them.
Right. So they would be covering more real estate, but they would just be like, hey, C.J., you've got the boundary and we're leaving you alone.
Yeah, which I mean, Courtney might be that level of player to do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talk about anointing this defense as 13 or 17 level good. I didn't really think they were. It's a good defense, and I think historically it'll go down as a good defense, especially if we end up on top of the podium in Frisco. I think you give the squad 2 years, we're going to be having that conversation a little more seriously, and that kind of went into the experience that we were talking about earlier.
Can Dutton Heifer be my guy?
I think so.
My 1T.
I just
the love of my life.
A big nasty 325-pound D tackle.
Even 305. At this point, 305.
That you cannot move.
Yeah.
That's what you need because NDSU recruits the way NDSU recruits.
Yep.
Every other team in the Valley recruits to beat NDSU. And that's a fact of the matter. And they recruit big, giant, heavy offensive linemen, guys like me, to move people. And you need to have people that cannot be moved.
Yeah.
And we've had that historically. We had Levon Perry. We had Nate Tangway. We had Steidel. Guys that are very, very hard to move.
Yeah.
You know, I just think we're kind of missing that element. And then love Jackson Hankey. I think he's going to go down as an all-timer, a great player. But I don't know what you do between the tackles with the other two linebackers if they're 205 pounds playing Missouri Valley offensive linemen.
And shoot, I mean, Jackson's all of 215.
Right. Not huge either.
Right.
Not a big guy.
And so here's what I'm going to say about all of that, and I think we'll kind of get wrapped up here. This is, and again, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but when I went on Bison 1660, and I think even on our preview bot, I said, this team, maybe more than any other team in Bison history, is defined by their start. And it is something that Matt Entz has talked about constantly, starting fast weeks of practice, starting fast in the game. This team needs to be up 10-0. They need to.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they're up 10-0, they can run clock. They are able to sprinkle in those deep throws when they have a compressed defense against them.
Right.
More importantly, on the defensive side, North Dakota State wants you throwing it.
Yeah.
Because Jasir is going to lock you down in the slot, and they're going to be able to get after you in the pass game with these athletic defensive linemen. And do they have the best group of corners in the world outside of Courtney Eubanks? No. But they've got three really good safeties, and they've got dogs for pass rushers.
Yeah.
A wave of dogs.
And waves is the correct thing, because anybody who steps foot on the field to play defensive end can get home to the quarterback. I think, like you said, 10-0 is like, one, there's a psychological factor of like, oh, shit, it's the Bison.
Yeah.
It's 10-0. That happened quick. But when even it's a 7-7 game, it's hard to change tempo where if they score late and go up, how do we change tempo? And we're like, okay, now we have to score in a minute and a half.
Right.
And that's just something we're not used to doing. And that's a factor of dominating people and being up 10-0 right away.
Yes.
But I think that's something that obviously needs to be fixed, and I think will. I think as bad as Saturday was, I think it's a wake-up call.
Yeah.
You know, I told you and I predicted us to win, but like me and you said the entire game that it doesn't matter. I just didn't want to see the step back that I think happened. But I think it's going to be a great spark into the second half of the season into January that, hey, we got to play better or we're going to have the same result losing in the semifinals.
Yeah. And what I'll also say, and this will kind of wrap up the show, is just that, I mean, yes, it was a step back, but I talked about how this team was not equipped to be down in that fashion.
Right.
You should be damn proud of your squad that it was an onside kick situation.
For sure.
They had every right to just lay down, understand that the Valley was still in front of them, understand that the national championship was still in front of them, whatever, let these idiots take their rock and go downtown to Cubby's.
Full example of Bison pride on Saturday.
Yeah, and I know it was a game that you'd like to win. Next year in the Dome is going to be out of control. But I predicted a loss. I said 27-24. It was 27-19.
Yep.
You know, and if they called the DPI on Gindy, I might have nailed the score.
Right.
So it kind of came out as expected for me, and I expect a massive response against Youngstown State this weekend for sure. We're not going to get into that one. This one's gone long enough. Plus, we've got hopefully an episode of the Big Deck Tailgate Show coming this week. Hopefully, we will have a preview show. Hopefully, a basketball episode for you guys should be a big, big content.
Lots of content.
Yeah, here at Bison Report, we want to thank everybody for listening this long. Zach, I want to thank you. Want to thank producer/intern Brennan for his time this weekend, and definitely have a phenomenal week, everyone. And go Bison. Also, shout out Big Deck Barbecue.